Listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. This is Writer's Voices, and I'm Shemaine Montana. And with me is Caroline Kilborn, our regular co-host.
Well, hello.
Hello. How are you today?
Oh, pretty good.
On this drizzly day.
Drizzly day, getting ready for fall and winter. You know what I'm doing, though. See, if I get my winter clothes out, then it'll turn warm again. So that's what I'm going to do tomorrow.
Good plan.
I'll beat the system.
Good plan. Well, today we have a very special guest that I've been looking forward to talking with, Mariel Hemingway. As the granddaughter of illustrious author Ernest Hemingway, Mariel has always been destined to be well-known and publicly recognized. However, at the young age of 13, Mariel became famous in her own right when she made her silver screen debut in Lipstick. 4 years later, her work in Woody Allen's Manhattan earned her an Oscar nomination. She has since made 30 films and numerous television appearances in series and as a host of several environmental and humanitarian documentaries. For over 20 years, Mariel has been pursuing her passion for yoga and health and is now seen as a voice of holistic and balanced health and well-being. As part of that role, she leads wellness retreats all over America, sharing her insights about movement, silence, nutrition, and home. Mariel is author of 3 books, Finding My Balance, her best-selling memoir, Mariel Hemingway's Healthy Living from the Inside Out, and the book we'll be talking about today, Mariel's Kitchen, Simple Ingredients for a Healthy and Delicious Life. Mariel's Kitchen is also a company that will produce real food products with a real life message. Her first product is Bliskits, a healthy, gluten-free, sugar-free cookie to be sold at Target.
Wow.
Yeah, Mariel believes that the health of the body and mind and spirit is the first step in becoming conscious of the health and well-being of the environment that surrounds us. So eat real food grown organically and locally and get more in touch with who you are and how we interact with our communities. You can check out her message and her mission on both MarielHemingway.com and MarielsKitchen.com. So this is exciting.
You know, when I thought when Monica gave me this book and I thought, oh, you know, another cookbook. Yeah, and then I opened it up.
Yeah.
And wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have not felt this way about a cookbook for a long time.
Yeah,
me too. I actually
felt
like this cookbook could change my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show, Mariel.
Oh, thank you. What nice words. I feel the same way about it, not because I wrote it, but I think that, you know, food has the potential to really change our lives in a really positive and powerful way.
Yeah. Oh, the pictures are just, you know, it makes me hungry. I don't want to read this unless
you
get some food pretty quick here.
It's like not shopping on an empty stomach.
Yeah, right.
Well, I loved how in the introduction you talked about the importance of food, and people know you as being really into yoga, but really food is the number one. Food is where it all starts.
Well, yeah, I think that food is the beginning of becoming aware of your body. I mean, we do it 3 times a day, every day. You can't avoid it. It's something, you know, we all do,
right,
whether or not
exactly.
You try not to do it or something. Point is, we, you know, food is part of our lives. And so when you think of food as a tool for, awakening and consciousness, it becomes a different focus. And that's what Mariel's Kitchen is about, is to kind of bring people in line with realizing that the food and the way that we nourish ourselves really is the way that we show up in the world. How do we become ourselves through the food that we eat? And, you know, because it's powerful, the impact that food has on us, and has on our environment, on our children, the people that we love. All these things really play a very, very big part in our lives, and food being such a strong grounding thing that makes us more conscious if we choose to see food in that light.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people interested in spirituality sometimes can tend to neglect physicality.
Mm-hmm.
But our physical lives are our spiritual lives, because a healthy body facilitates consciousness.
And I'm really glad you said that, because I think there is a disconnect. You know, you see these spiritual people and they sit and they meditate. It's all wonderful and they think about their breath and all that stuff. But there's a disconnect to the body. And that connection to the body, that connection to nature, which also has a lot to do with our, you know, our connection with food, is really, you know, part of our spiritual path.
Mm-hmm.
And when we sort of link everything up, because I do a lot of, I mean, my passion is to really make people, or help people to realize the connection of food, of movement, of the home, of cooking, of silence, all these 5 things put together really create a lifestyle, and lifestyle is what our lives is about. It's not one piece here. It's not, you know, one diet fits all. It's not one diet. It's not one movement. They're not separate. We're all, you know, we're made up of 99% space, and that space makes us all very, very similar. And so we need to think of our lives in a holistic manner. And so food becomes that integral, one of the very strong pieces that creates that synergy.
Mm-hmm. I know it's unusual for this to happen, but a friend of mine, her father, is 94, just passed away, and he died in the house where he was born.
Hmm.
He lived there all his life. He grew everything he ate because, of course, he lived on the farm. And which I know is not possible for a lot of people, but it was just amazing to me. His mind was sharp, and his wife froze and canned and everything. You know, everything that they had, everything they ate, they had grown, and it was just wonderful to see that, and the fact that he lived in that house all of his life.
Yeah,
and was able to die there. That was really great.
Well, that's something I've aspired to, that lifestyle, but it's not easy to achieve.
It's not easy to achieve, no.
And Mariel even talks about that in the book, where she has a section saying, well, ideally you'd grow all your own stuff, but until she can get there, here's shopping tips.
But you know, there's a lot more.
Well, you know, one of the things that is really cool about what's been happening in my life since I wrote the book is that I invested in a local farm.
Oh,
good.
For me, you know, and I'm not saying that everybody can do that, but everybody can support local farming, and that's what I say, you know, in the shopping tips. It's like, really go to farmers markets, really support your local farmers, really connect with them, because that's part of the journey. That's part of the ritual of food, and that's part of the spiritual kind of, when you think of the moving meditation of it, is when you start with where the food comes from. It's incredibly important. So I invested in this farm because my mission is to really, like we're talking about, is to really have people understand that connection with food. So investing in the farm was such a, I want to be a model of what people can do, mm-hmm. that they're able to do. It's not like you have to invest a lot of money but to connect with those farms, to connect with that lifestyle is really important as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And I realize it's not viable for a lot of people, but farmers markets are more and more available to people.
Yes.
And when you really tune into the importance of that, it's powerful. It makes you an environmentalist. I often talk about food being the first step into becoming green and ecology-minded.
Mm-hmm. My first husband grew up in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and in Lancaster there has been a central market for generations, and that's a big, huge farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother-in-law went there religiously and it's been there forever. And I'm sure there are other places in the United States where that's true as well. You have to seek them out. You have to look mm-hmm. and see if you can find them.
Our market here in Fairfield is getting ready to close up for the winter, but a couple of farmers are talking about making deliveries. I wanted to mention the Amish farmer who makes grass-fed beef is making deliveries to Fairfield. So if anyone wants to know more about that, you can email me at show@writersvoices.com, and I'll give you his information.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Amish, because I actually drink Amish milk. I mean, soon the farm, farm provides goat milk, which is close to me, which is better for the carbon footprint. But I do drink Amish milk, and because raw dairy is one of the most powerful and healing things. I never used to eat dairy. I was vegan for many years, and eating this way, when you talk about grass-fed beef, those animals are treated well. And one of the other reasons I invested in this farm is that we treat animals so poorly in this country, and factory
mm-hmm.
farming is
mm-hmm.
such a crime.
Yeah.
But when people make the choice to eat good meat or eat meat, they should make good choices. It should be, not abused animals. And what we're understanding is, when I invested in the farm, one of the first things we did is we saved thousands of chickens that were so-called cage-free and range-free, and it turns out they only had an hour outside of a cage on a cement thing, and
wow.
a little bit of sunshine, and range-free meant they could turn around. And
wow.
these chickens were, destroyed, but we took the chickens. Now they're really healthy. They have feathers again. Their little gobbles are now pink instead of white. They had come white. So it's about having an understanding of really what's going on in the world of food. I think we are so uninformed about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
right.
a little scary. We really need to focus on, if food's important to you and it becomes a spiritual practice, then you really want to know where it comes from. It sounds like a bigger journey than it is, but once you start to get the knowledge, it comes in very quickly, and it becomes this kind of great adventure of your health and well-being, and it connects your kids, and there's just a wonderful journey that can happen when you start to focus on what's really happening with your food, and then you make different choices. So maybe you don't have meat all the time,
right.
but when you have it, you've gotten the Amish meat, and you know that it's treated well, and it's grass-fed, and it's a real cow roaming around, and it hasn't, added to the incredible pollution in the world because it, came from a factory farm, and they were,
mm-hmm.
force-fed and hormone-injected. It becomes a different journey. You just have an awareness of really what's going on, and we really need, as human beings, to understand the importance of food in our body.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We take so much for granted, and, just like clean water, we take clean water for granted, and every time I turn on the faucet.
Absolutely. Water is another powerful thing to really become aware of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
While we're talking about grass-fed beef, I just had a real quick personal story I wanted to share that I learned just how powerful it is to have healthier quality food. One time when I was recovering from a serious illness and I really wasn't ready to work, but I needed money, so I got a job at Taco Bell. And some days I had this idea that lower paying jobs are lower paying because they're easier, and I learned.
I don't think so.
It was really tough.
Opposite, probably.
Yeah, yeah. And so some days I just wouldn't get it together to eat breakfast, and I'd eat Taco Bell. Other days, other days I'd fix myself hamburger and eggs, and then other days I'd have grass-fed hamburger and free-range eggs. And if I wasn't in poor health, I wouldn't have felt it so dramatically. But when I ate Taco Bell, it was as if I had only had a scrap of nutrition, and my legs felt wobbly, and my muscles just didn't have any juice. And, you know, the meat was better, but the grass-fed made me feel tremendous, like I was in great health, I was bouncy. Yeah. And so I don't experience it as dramatically anymore, but I know that it's really worth it to put good quality food in my system.
Well, that you told the story, it reminds me, the other day my boyfriend and I were walking through what's called the Third Street Promenade, where we're close to where we live, and we're, you know, doing some shopping or whatever, looking around at things. And I had to use the bathroom, so we went into the, you know, quote-unquote food court, whatever that meant. We walked into this food court, and we both became extremely silent, and the... It was just such a, you know, the food there was, you know, Taco Bell, McDonald's. It was, you know, it was fast food. It was bad food, you know, and you could smell it, and it smelled like grease, and there was just something really off about it. And all the, you know, kind of chemical, sugary smells were kind of mixing, and it was nauseating, to be quite honest. And I came out of the bathroom. We came down the escalators, and my boyfriend looked at me, and he goes, "What are you thinking right now?" And I was like, wow, the frequency of the frequency of the food and the people was so low. The vibration was just off. We saw these kids who were like 13, 14, and there was just, they were heavy. You could sense the hormones in their bodies, and their mind was clouded. You could just sense it by looking at them. And that's not a judgment, like they were bad kids or anything, but just the frequency of the food was causing a numbness in their ability to focus and feel free. It was almost as though the food had taken away their freedom and their sense of energy and life and vitality. Something that I remember as a kid was just, you know, we were running around and we had tremendous energy, and you know, food was different. It wasn't that we all ate organic food. We probably ate way too much sugar, but at least it was real. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And if you're depressed or sick, you know, it's hard to contact your spiritual self.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're talking about wellness, and, you know, I like you don't sense it if you're eating well in your life, but boy, if you... I had to go to Turkey this summer. I was making a film there, and I thought, oh, I'll be in this beautiful place. I ended up in the middle of the desert, and that's a whole other story. But
I'll bet.
The food was horrible.
Oh.
Horrible, and there's not a lot I could do. You know, I tried to really limit what I would eat, and I brought stuff from the States, but it was starting to wane, and I didn't have very much of it left. And the way that I was starting to feel, you know, there was the cloudy brain. There's a lack of focus, and that's me, and I'm being careful. So you think of, you know, regular people, you know, just trying to get by, and you realize no wonder there's so much depression. I come from a family of depression. It's probably one of the biggest reasons why I got interested in food, is that I sensed inherently that food had a direct impact on the way that I was emotionally.
Absolutely.
There's mental illness in my family that's extraordinary. And I know, looking at food and alcohol and all these different addictions, that I was an addictive personality, and that there was some connection there, although I did lots of crazy things in my past to get where I am. But now I've found that balance that works for me. You know, and everybody's different, but everybody knows that real food, good food, clean food is the best answer. You know, how you combine it or what you do or whether you're more meat-oriented or fat-oriented, that's your choice. But good, simple food is always the best choice for you.
Now you're addicted to health.
Yeah,
right.
That's true. Well, that's the thing. I've often said that. I am no less an addictive personality. I just have a better addiction.
Right.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about this
Xylosweet.
Is that like the stevia and the other sweeteners that are?
Well, I use Xylosweet in the book because it was easy to bake with. It
okay.
is natural. My cookies, which you mentioned at the beginning of the show, from Mariel's Kitchen, which are called Bliskets, which I also have a recipe in the book,
mm-hmm.
They are sweetened commercially. They'll be in the marketplace with agave nectar. But that was harder for people to use and bake with, so I used Xylosweet, and it's not a chemical, although it's not the best name, and it's why I didn't want to use it for the cookies that are coming out in the market, because it just doesn't sound like a natural product,
mm-hmm.
and I want everybody to know that, you know, the food that I'll be involved with is real.
Well, I had not seen this Xylosweet on the shelf.
Xylosweet actually is made from red birch bark. It's very healthy. It doesn't raise the glycemic. And it's very easy to bake with, but you can use alternatives. You can use stevia, and you can use agave. It just the measurements are different because the agave is liquid.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, they I always say, Chris, I don't drink pop, but when someone offers me a sugar-free pop, I say no. My body knows what to do with sugar. It does not know what to do with chemicals.
Yeah,
you're absolutely correct, and it's that way with everything, even with vitamins that people take. Mm-hmm. You know, people take all kinds of, I don't eat well, but I take handfuls of vitamins in the morning. Most of them are chemically processed. The body doesn't know what to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's expensive pee, usually. The liver and the kidney doesn't know how to process a chemical. And you're right about, fake food, fake sugar is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another one of the features of the diet you present in the book is gluten-free, which
yes.
is really helpful.
Well, gluten-free is a powerful, powerful thing. I mean, I personally am affected by gluten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so am I.
Me too.
And,
both of us don't like gluten.
And the reason is not because gluten itself is bad, because it really isn't. I mean, when I grew up, I didn't have a problem with gluten, but people are having a problem with gluten now, and the reason is because how we process grains.
Uh-huh.
It's because we put pesticides on the grains, and it's in the water table, and there's even hormones injected into the soil. So that's what. This is my personal opinion. I think that's why there's such a problem with gluten. Because when I was a kid, I ate bread.
Oh yeah, me too.
Problem, but kids nowadays have a problem. It's affecting kids dramatically, and there's a real link between gluten and autism. So so I think it's a really powerful statement to be gluten free as much as possible, especially in this country, unless you can get clean grain. And that's hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can tell that gluten-free is becoming more popular because Betty Crocker has gluten-free things.
Oh, does she?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, it's nice. The only thing that I sort of, not warn people, but like be aware of, is sometimes gluten-free then becomes, it was kind of like the fat-free craze. The minute it says fat-free on the label, you think you're home free, but then if you look at the ingredients, there's all this kind of weird...
Yeah.
You don't want weird ingredients in replacement for,
right.
Wheat. You just want, another kind of grain that is gluten-free.
Yeah, well, tapioca
you don't want,
or whatever.
Some crazy soy thing that's going to be, not as healthy or clean.
Yeah.
You don't want another processed grain to replace the gluten-free.
Yeah.
Gluten, sorry.
In your introduction, you really got my attention when you said, in order to happen three times a day, it's got to be streamlined. Because we're talking about healthy food, but of course, cooking from scratch and not eating processed food takes time, so it's a challenge. Can you talk about what you did in your book to help make a streamlined
eating? Well, I, like everybody else, don't have a ton of time every day. Like, people say, how can I cook for myself? But the fact of the matter is, good, clean food is simple food and should be easy, and that's what Mariel's Kitchen's about. The recipes are easy, the ingredients are not that difficult, so it should be an easy process. But also, one of the helping things that I recommend is you know, fill your pantry with food that you have all the time, you know, whether it's almond meal or different things that you know you can use, gluten-free pastas and all these different things, brown rice, good whole grains, all kinds of spices, these kinds of things you want to have on hand. And then plan your week. You know, go take a day during the week where you go, okay, I think that three nights this week I can cook something. And choose a recipe out of the book or whatever, and sort of go, okay, I can see that, and maybe I'll buy the chicken, or maybe I'll do this, whatever, and just plan ahead. And when you start getting that kind of organization, and it's one of the things I talk about in Healthy Living from the Inside Out, is clearing clutter and finding an organization to your daily existence creates a clarity of health and wealth. Mm-hmm. You just start to feel better about everything. Mm-hmm. So when you organize in that way, it really helps just make things pretty clear.
Mm-hmm. We're fortunate here in this town because we have a huge health food store.
Mm-hmm. Has, especially for our size.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, has a variety of you know, flours and so forth, and also, you know, they have commercial things. They have cookies. Gluten-free cookies and crackers and so forth. You can buy a lot of things gluten-free once you start looking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, they have some great, you know, like pancake things.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got great recipes in Meryl's Kitchen for gluten-free pancakes and waffles. And, you know, there's some fun things that you can do. But there's a lot of, you know, when you have a great market around you, you're really fortunate. And most people have a fairly good health food store around. But if you don't, I've got lots of resources in the back where you can order bulk, you know, almond meal or whatever it is, or gluten-free flour that you can get online, and it's cheaper, and that's a bulk pantry item.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about your sugar-free ketchup. I'm definitely going to try that.
Oh, and it's so delicious, because who doesn't love that? And I've got, like, the sweet potato fries. Oh,
mm-hmm.
Really good.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that ketchup should be sweetened, like, why?
Yeah.
You know, we sort of get, you know, and if you look at even the health food versions, all have sugar in them, and it's not really necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tomatoes are sweet by nature, and when you put the right amount of salt with them, it enhances the natural sweetness of the tomato.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't actually need sugar.
Yeah, I actually find the health food ketchups too sweet.
They're too sweet, yeah. And if you need a little and you make it raw, then you just add raw honey. And raw honey is great. I don't ever cook with it, because the minute you cook with honey, it becomes just sugar and it raises the glycemic in a big way. But honey is 90% enzymes raw, and that's incredibly good for your liver. It's only 10% carbohydrate, so it doesn't, you know, it's not bad for you. It's actually really, really good for your health.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to KRUU 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and this is Writer's Voices, and we're talking today with Mariel Hemingway, author of Mariel's Kitchen, which is a wonderful cookbook. And I wanted to make sure to showcase that it's not just a cookbook. There's personal thoughts in the beginning of each chapter and lots of neat sections, the Green Kitchen Challenge, Simple and Satisfying Entertainment, a section on your personal family heirloom silverware, shopping tips, creating your kitchen space, and a resource list. These were nice touches. And, you know, you don't think of a cookbook as something that you want to curl up with on a rainy day, but I really enjoyed spending a couple of hours reading through your very personal introductions to each chapter.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, like I said, again, I don't see the journey of food, or just because it's a cookbook doesn't mean that it's not personal. In fact, I think that food is incredibly personal, and everybody has an issue with it, too.
Uh-huh.
You know, we all have our things about food, or the food that makes us feel good about ourselves, or, you know, we think of, and, you know, you talked about the different things in the book, like family heirlooms. I mean, you know, there's holidays that are reminiscent of certain foods that make us feel good. So, and I wanted to look at that in the book too, and you know, what are the foods that are nourishing and are like comfort foods, but how can we make those actually healthy for you? So I'm glad that you feel that you can curl up the book. I wanted it to not just be a recipe book for mm-hmm. people, because mm-hmm. I'm not a great chef. I'm just somebody who believes that love should be the intention behind the food, instead of a replacement for love, which is what it was in my house growing up.
Mm.
There was tremendously great gourmet food, but there was a lack of, you know, heart. There was a lack of connection there.
Mm-hmm.
And when food comes from the right place, it has the ability to transform your life and heal you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Indeed.
I love how you talk about little touches like put in a comfortable chair in your kitchen so your family can sit and talk to you while you cook.
It's true.
Hang out in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in my comfortable chair in the kitchen right now.
See, people gravitate to the kitchen naturally when you have a group of people. That's where you're going to find most of them,
mm-hmm.
is in the kitchen.
Oh, you know, I've always said that the kitchen really is the heart of one's home.
It is.
Mm-hmm. It just becomes that place where people, it's the place of festivity. It's the place of, like, connection. It's the place of, you know, sharing your daily, whatever happened. I mean, the kitchen's a really powerful, powerful place, and it should be, I really think of it as a sacred space, and should be looked at that way. Not sacred in the sense that you tiptoe around, but it's a place of, you know, it's a place of family. It's a place of love. It's a place of connection.
Mm-hmm. That's why people gravitate there. It's just...
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
In the beginning, the first introduction, you were very personal and talked about your own health journey. Was it a complex decision for you how personal to be? Or do you just feel comfortable?
I never... I think that everybody has the same problems. I just think there's different wrapping paper. So for me, you know, when I share about mental illness in my family, the addictions, all these different things, I just feel like I'm sharing a version of everybody else's problem.
Because it's often our story that
I will do a speaking engagement and, you know, 100 people will come up to me afterwards and say, oh, my God, I have the same story. But of course you do. We all do. You know, when I talk about 99% space, it's really true. We're made up of 99.99999% space. That means that's how much we're the same. It's only 0.0001% that we're different, that makes us unique and special, and that is unique and special. But our connection and our similarity is so powerful. We really, you know, the people talk about oneness and it sounds all woo-woo, but the truth is that's a scientific fact that we're made up of space and we're made up of the same, you know, cellular structure in many, many ways. So when I share personal stories, I'm sharing versions of what everybody has.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like being an actress for me. You know, if I play a character that seems very different from me, in many ways you can find a grain of any character inside of you and just make that grow.
Right.
You know, because we all have a bit of that in us.
Right. And that's beautiful. That's a beautiful answer. Well, let's talk about how the book came together. I know I looked through the credits and I could see that, wow, a large team of helpers goes into making a book like this happen.
Yeah.
So starting with the recipes, did you develop them all at home? And when you develop your own recipes, do you end up writing it down, or was there a process to go from what you just do intuitively in your kitchen to getting them as written recipes?
Exactly. No, there's definitely a process. I was not, you know, I'm not a recipe writer. I was somebody who, you know, I'll get in the kitchen and play with things, and there were recipes that I'd grown up with that I changed to make healthier, but I didn't know actually how to do that or how to measure. So I worked with a woman named Denise Vivaldo who helped me create recipes because I didn't know, you know, when you're just doing it intuitively and you're just doing it from memory or from the way I was brought up, I couldn't figure out how to do that. So I owe Denise and her team a lot of help in helping me create those recipes from, you know, things that I was making at home.
Yeah, from food fanatics.
Right? I would say, when I would tell people, I was like, well, it feels like this. The dough feels like this in your hand. It's
Work. Like my grandmother, she didn't...
Oh, that doesn't work for a recipe book. Oh.
Yeah.
She didn't use a spoon. She mixed up things with her hands.
Yeah.
My grandmother,
yes,
she did.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I do a lot of... Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big...
She got the feel of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what about writing the preparation instructions? Did they have to work with you to order things?
That wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
That wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
The obvious, and if you, you know, I grew up with a lot of cookbooks around, and my mother was always reading cookbooks. It's pretty basic, and the dialogue becomes similar, and with food, there's always certain things that you do, you know, sautéing versus pureeing versus, mm-hmm. you know, braising, and all these different things. It just becomes a language that you learn to speak.
And we've interviewed other cookbook writers, so I've gotten some insight into what goes into the making of a book, and I'm imagining that the writing editors and the graphic layout people all wanted to nudge around the cooking instructions to make them fit nicer on the page or word them differently. Is that true?
Well, yeah, they did. They definitely have to fit a format. There's no question. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. you can't have like, well, you can, but it doesn't look as nice if you have 2.5 pages or 2.25 pages of instruction.
Yeah.
But also, I wanted to keep everything simple anyway.
Yeah.
It wasn't Julia Child's Joy of Cooking or something where it was just like this intense, you know, 10-step process.
Yeah.
The irony of me bringing her up, my father sent my mother to Cordon Bleu in Paris to learn how to cook when they first got married.
Oh, my gosh.
They got married. And then they got married in Paris, and Julia Child was their maid of honor.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
Wow.
Oh, gosh.
So you definitely had some good food growing up.
Yes, exactly.
Well, working with such a large creative team, not just on the recipes, but on the layout and the photos and even the wardrobe, did you have to push to keep it true to your vision, or was everyone pretty symbiotic?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, it was definitely, everybody was my book. It was shot in my house. I worked with an assistant who we went and got the clothes together, because mm-hmm. I don't change my clothes every time I make a new dish.
Uh-huh.
But, so, you know, no, I never had to push. They were very respectful of what my vision was. So, you know, all the pictures outside or in my house and, you know, my dogs and all of it. It was just a part of my life. I never felt like, oh, I have to compromise this.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and it's funny now. I mean, I'm writing a new book now with my partner, and it just develops this whole knowledge about food and health and wellness and longevity and getting younger is a process, and it's constant. It's another lifestyle play. So I'm writing another book that's going to be even deeper into food, into movement, into health and wellness and getting younger and playing and having fun. It's mm-hmm. really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Leads me to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask you
something. I feel compromised. I'm always like, oh, this is great. I feel like sharing the book, and it kind of gets back to, you know, sharing personal stories. It's like just going deeper into my own journey and sharing it with others. It becomes really fun and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Is this almond meal, is that the same as almond flour, or is that coarser?
It's the same.
It's the same.
It's
okay.
It's just ground almonds, which... It's pretty much almond meal and almond flour are about the same. They can't make it that much finer than an almond meal.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
I've never used that, but I'm definitely going to try it.
Oh, so good. And it's just really good for you. I mean, almonds are really, really good for you anyway.
My daughter-in-law devised a recipe. She calls it oatmeal bake, and it's baked like a cake. It's oatmeal and eggs and oil and mashed up banana and peaches or chopped apple, whatever you want to put in, and it is really good.
Oh,
it's really
delicious.
Good. Yeah, maybe I'll
love stuff like that, because I know that she probably came up with that through some sort of concoction and doing something. That's how I came up with Bliskets and all the Bliskets recipes, which became a core recipe, which now I'm developing for the marketplace. It's all about, it's like, I think the kitchen should be fun. You know, you should be, mm-hmm. I feel like a scientist in the kitchen.
Well, yeah, you are, absolutely.
So it's exciting that your Bliskets are going to be for sale at Target. Will they be for sale at other stores too?
Well, Tully's, I don't know if you have a if Tully's is out where you are, but it's
no.
pretty much the Northwest. It's a coffee place in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. That's actually where the first launch, this kind of soft launch is going to happen,
mm-hmm.
and then Target. And we're hoping Starbucks as well, which would be really great because I think Starbucks would be great for them to have another, you know, a healthy option. But that's not definitive at all.
Yeah, that would be great.
And are you planning to move into other food products?
Oh,
also?
Absolutely. Whole Foods and, you know, any health food stores and Trader Joe's, you know, those kinds of stores.
When might we see them at Target?
Well, at Target, I think it's going to happen in the next 2 months.
Okay. Ah, okay. All I'll right. be on the lookout.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think because, you know, this process, the whole logistics of getting things into the marketplace is very difficult, but we do have our first order, so that's exciting.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. That's a great idea. So how did you connect with all of your helpers, the photographers, the food stylists, the wardrobe?
Well, through my publisher, they gave me options for the photographer, and he lives really close by. Sweetest, great guy. And the thing that was nice about him is that he's done a lot of, you know, quote-unquote celebrity photography, so he's done a lot of people, but he also photographs food a lot, and there's a difference. You know, the way you photograph food is very different the way you photograph a person. So he really knows how to highlight the food, and I think the food looks absolutely gorgeous.
It does.
Nice thing, something that I really wanted to have happen in the book is that I believe that, you know, the best cookbooks have great photos of food. I want to see what my food looks like. I don't want a drawing of a cake or a drawing of a chicken on a thing. I want to see. And the nice thing about these photographs is when you look at them, that's the way your food's going to look. And I like that. I want to know that that's what's going to happen for me, not that, you know, the souffle is going to fall and it's going to look like some horror show.
Yeah.
And I actually proved that you can make a souffle anywhere because I did it on the Today Show and I was nervous as anything, but it worked and it still looked beautiful.
Well, you know, the pictures, for instance, that there's one page of little peas, and I love peas. And so, you know, that's just, oh, man, that's just perfect. he is really a master of photography of food.
He really is. Isn't he great?
Yeah.
No, he's, and just a good guy, you know, you probably feel the same way. Anything that anybody does, you want to have a connection with the people that you do it with. You want to feel as though, especially something that's personal. And if I think of it as a spiritual journey, then I want the people around to be connected with me in the same kind of way, that they feel as though they're gaining from this experience. And we've all stayed connected. Beth Trondo, who kind of did the layout of the book, and I mean, she's wonderful and very talented, and we had a wonderful experience. It was a week long, you know, the photography session was a week long process at my house a year ago, and we just had the best time. We laughed, and you can tell we did. I think there's a picture at the very end where we're all, like, together, and I don't know, is it in the book? I think it is. And I was putting Cheese Whiz on something, like all the grossest foods you could possibly imagine. We did it as a joke. And it was just fun. We had a really, really, really good time.
Yeah, and it took 4 weeks to do all the photography, right, in your home?
Yeah, it was a process.
It's a
There's
process.
No question.
Yeah, and it's tricky, isn't it, to photograph the food before it falls or wilts or dries out.
Yes.
You have a short window.
For another thing where Denise was fantastic. She knows how to photograph food, and he was right there ready to go. The lighting was perfect. And it was all done outside, so there was a lot of heat, so you had to be really careful.
Oh, yeah.
It was all edible and fantastic, you know.
Yeah. Were you in there cooking, or did you have the Food Fanatics people do the cooking? And
for the shoot, they were doing it because it's very specific when you do it for photographs.
Uh-huh.
So they actually do it, and you know, in a way. But, I was there. I was like...
Yeah, yeah. And you were probably getting ready to be photographed with the food.
I was changing those outfits.
Right. it was really an education looking at the credits and thinking about it, because I can see the artistry involved in matching your outfit to the food, to the atmosphere. And it's really a beautiful work of art.
Yeah. Thank you. I feel the same way.
So do you have a reading that you'd like to do from the book?
Sure.
Would you like to read from the introduction?
Sure.
Perhaps. And
you can tell me what you'd like me to read. I never know. I guess I could.
I like the introduction. Or,
any of the chapter
introduction. I'll just read part of their introduction. How much would you like me to read?
5 minutes.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. The kitchen is the heart of my home. It's where my day begins and where my day ends. It's where I can feel the pulse of my world. Every person and every animal in my family passes through the kitchen at some point, and they show what they need without any pretense. There's something about the primal activity that happens in the kitchen, that very necessary feeding of body and brain that makes people and small dogs very honest. First thing, last thing, and throughout the day, when I'm home, my kitchen is also where I check in with myself. Food is the centering point. It's the foundation from which everything else, productivity, creativity, loving, and evolving can start. Not long ago, I had the experience of befriending a new kitchen, medium-sized, unpretentious, and instantly welcoming. My kitchen quickly became the heart of my new home. The floor is lined in fat clay tiles that stay cool under bare feet. The counter space is modest, so I keep it clutter-free. I furnished it simply with a big farmhouse table and one cozy armchair. Daughters and friends have somewhere to sit where I tear pale lettuce leaves or mix dough with my hands. It's the opposite of a perfect designer kitchen. Those rooms leave me cold. There's little appeal in marble surfaces never splashed with yellow olive oil or state-of-the-art sinks that never graced by blackened pans. A kitchen only comes alive when it's used. The feeling in my kitchen is a reflection of my food, easy and comfortable, integrated into a busy life. I appreciate the gourmet chefs of the world, but part of what makes food satisfying for me is simplicity. A piece of fish with a fresh veggie salsa requires just minutes of dicing. Fresh herbs mixed in unusual combinations like cumin and mint are enough to excite my senses. Shaking a bottle of my own freshly made dressing, as rich as store-bought but infinitely more lively, never fails to give me a smile. This simplicity around food is also designed by necessity. Of all the things I do to stay happy and balanced, healthy eating gets top priority. To happen 3 times a day, it's got to be streamlined. This news surprises some who know my passion for yoga, exercise, and spiritual practice. Surely they think those things are more sacred than what I have for lunch, but none of them can happen without the energy and clarity that comes from eating well. And as I've found over and over, food is the first teacher of all the qualities these other practices develop: awareness, acceptance, gratitude, and grace. Wake up to what you put in your body. Notice how your food or drink feels, how it heals or hurts, and you will inevitably wake up to your whole life. It took a few decades to come to this understanding, but now my definition of healthy eating comes more from common sense wisdom than the encyclopedic knowledge of nutrition stored in my mind. When we prepare food fresh and eat it slowly, we know when we are full and we get more nourishment from it. Physically and emotionally, in ourselves and our spirits, we're happier and more satisfied. Bad habits around food, eating too much, too little, or mindlessly grazing all day long, begin to fall away. For me, food is medicine at a deep level. It has profound power in every aspect of our lives, shaping who we are, how we feel physically, how we connect with others, and whether or not we are productive and present. We tend to underestimate just how much food can change our state. Yet we all agree that popping an Advil makes a headache or body pain go away in 20 minutes. So why wouldn't processed food like fats and chemically sweetened diet drinks dramatically alter our mood and sense of well-being as quickly as an Advil did? And why wouldn't vital fresh foods make an equally strong impact to the positive? Foods are our building blocks and our chemistry makers. We literally are what we eat. Consume food that is fresh, clean, full of color, vitality, and energy, and you become energetic, vibrant, colorful, and clean in your whole being. Your life mirrors your fuel. And doing this has a bigger impact still. You are inspired to make changes throughout your life when changes around eating prove so simple.
That's probably good right there.
Oh, that's very powerful. It really is.
Thank you.
Ew.
Reading that, I just felt my relationship with food healing. You know, just really beautiful words and nicely written. Did you get help from professional writers, or have you?
Well, I write all the personal stuff. I don't write the researchy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that I don't like to do, I don't have to do, but I write these personal things, the introductions and the... No, I love to write.
Yeah. Did you get the writing bug from your grandfather?
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, I imagine you did. It's in your genes. You can't escape it.
Not very much of it, but
yeah,
enough to write a self-help book.
Yeah. This picture of you with your Yorkies is really sweet.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, they're really sweet dogs,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they are. They are.
Have you pursued writing in its own right, no pun intended? Have you taken workshops?
Not yet. I think about it. Yeah. It makes me nervous. I mean, I wrote Finding My Balance was my first book, uh-huh, which is my life through the eyes of yoga. I use yoga as a metaphor for something that I'm going through in my life, that I was going through in my past, not because I thought my life was so fabulous or anything, but to share my sort of journey. Mm-hmm. And that was much more of a personal writing journey. But I've thought about writing fiction, but I don't think I'm ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have too much to say. It's not
well,
fiction.
Well, I do, and I really love what I'm doing. You know, I know that I've been known as an actress, but this really is my passion, to really share
mm-hmm.
my style, tips and wisdom and tools and things like that with others so that they can be the best that they can be, that they can be their best nutritionist, their best chef, their best, you know, trainer, their whatever. It's all within us as human individuals to be able to listen to our inner voice. And that's what, you know, that's what sort of my life plan is to just help others to really find their own strong personal individual voice of health and wellness and vitality.
Yeah. You know, a lot of celebrities used ghostwriters to help them write books, but I sort of guessed from talking to you, you're very eloquent just in speaking. So I guessed that would make you a good writer.
Well, thank you.
Speaking of being an actress, what is this movie that you were making? Was it in Turkey, you said?
Oh, yeah, it was a crazy movie that was completely in Turkish. I got there, nobody spoke English. It was American girl. It was crazy. It was crazy. We ended up in the desert near Iraq on the Syrian border. People were being kidnapped not far from
us. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I thought I was going to end up in the Mediterranean and be near Greece. And it was a different experience, but I lived to have it and come back, and I'm okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's good. That's good. Well, you never know. You never know what's around the corner, do you?
No, you don't. You really don't.
Yeah. How did you get connected with your publisher?
Well, I wrote my first book with Simon Schuster, Finding My Balance, and HarperCollins got in touch with me. They wanted to publish Healthy Living from the Inside Out, and then they were just like, let's go with this cookbook. At first it was going to be about greening your kitchen, and I thought, you know, that's just, it's a great idea, but there's something deeper there, and we came up with the idea of a cookbook and you know, kind of lifestyle play with that.
Mm-hmm. So are all three of your books published with the same publisher?
No. First one, Finding My Balance, with Simon Schuster, mm-hmm. and then Healthy Living from the Inside Out and Mariel's Kitchen are Harper One.
Harper One. Okay. And where can people find out more?
You can buy a book immediately right now this second if you go to MarielHemingway.com. That's the book promo page, and you get some free gifts with that, and you can join my website. My new website will be up in this next week on MarielHemingway.com, which is, you can join the community. It, you know, there'll be new recipes there, and you know, lots of wisdom from other doctors and life coaches like Ariel Ford and Debbie Ford and Ariel as well. So there's a lot of different things going on, but you can go to MarielHemingway.com to get the book right now, and you can buy any of my books through that website.
Okay. Are they also on bookstore shelves right now?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Whole thing.
And what are you working on right now, besides
my next book, which I'm writing with my boyfriend, who's as obsessed with food as I am, and with health and wellness, is really about adventure and fitness and food, and I'll be talking more about the farm and all these different things. So I'm working on that right now. I'm also producing a movie of my grandfather's book, A Movable Feast, which is really exciting. Kind of ironic that it's a movable feast. I've got a television show that I'm creating, kind of a lifestyle wellness show.
And when do you sleep?
I sleep. And sleep's really important to me. And that's the other thing. Like, I'm really busy, but I make time to meditate every day, to work out every day. Mm. I just do it, you know, and I sleep. And sleep is so, so important. That's one of the things that we're talking about in the next book, is the importance of sleep and making that time. It's about orchestrating your day and kind of organizing it so that you can get all the things done that you want to do and finding time for yourself. It's really very important.
Yeah. In my own healing journey, part of it is just really getting it that if I'm busy, it's not going to do me any good to stay up late and be tired the next day.
It really doesn't. It makes you feel just rotten. Right. I mean, you do it once in a while. It's fun. Like, we had a reading of a friend's script here last night, and it was a late night. We're wimps. We're like, wow, we can't do that very often. I'm not an event girl.
The trick is to turn off your brain when you lie down, because sometimes you're thinking, and they can't sleep.
And the ways to do that is, what do you do during your day so that you're able to turn off your brain at night?
Mm-hmm.
Don't go to technology the last thing that you do at night.
Right.
You know, there's certain things, the ways of making, and you know, did you have any kind of physical movement out in nature or something that tires you? You know, the body needs to have some movement in order to be tired. Not every single day, but something.
Yeah,
right.
Be anything that's personal to you, but there are tools that help you to be, to gain more youth just by simple tools that you can use. And that's what I'm talking about in the next book.
Great.
We'll look forward to that.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to you again. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, when you get it, we'd love to have you on the show again. And we're completely out of time, but thank you so much. We were looking forward to this, and this has been a wonderful chat.
Oh, it's been lovely for me. It was so relaxing. I felt like, I can't believe that we're on the radio.
Yeah, yeah, we are. And an hour goes by fast, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Well, you're lovely to talk to, and I so appreciate.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And have a great rest of the day. And thank you for joining us on Writer's Voices.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Do you want me to?
Yeah.
And we forgot our quote from Caroline. What have you got for us?
Well, this says, after you've worked hard to get what you want, take time to enjoy it.
Perfect.
Thank you. Writers' Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and WritersVoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.